Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Grief fundamentally changes who we are and how we see the world. It's painful and heartbreaking, but also transformative and magical. This podcast is about grief and loss, but more importantly, it's about life and living fearlessly. I'm Kelsey Chittick. And welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Grieve.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we have a really great guest that has just written a book called On the Ledge. And our guest today is author Amy Turner. And she has a really unique, interesting, beautiful, hard story about many aspects of grief and loss and trauma, but mostly about resilience and grit. And she and I spoke a little bit before this podcast, and there was a lot of hard stuff that she went through that she'll discuss, but there was also a lot of gifts that she has come to find through what would be known for most of us as a pretty rough run the past 20 or 30 years. So, Amy, thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So I want to start by, obviously this is a grief podcast, but we're trying to talk about stuff that's not only grief related, but the gifts and the insights that we get from hard times. We all are, most of us are very clear on what it feels like to be in the hard spots, but what we are interested in here is what are some of the bright spots also. So can you just start at the beginning with your father and your experience with him as a young child? Because I do want to talk a little bit about how we help kids through trauma and the secrets we keep. So please.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. Well, one of the main themes and events of my precipitating events in my book relates to an experience that I had when I was 4.5. My father had been depressed. Of course, I didn't know that as a 4.5-year-old. And he climbed out of his hotel window on a business trip and was standing on the ledge contemplating a jump for 20 minutes. A priest, who was just a passerby, ran upstairs and talked to him and was able to talk him off the ledge. There's a gift, a beautiful bit of grace. In any event, my father then was hospitalized for a year, but at 4.5, all I knew was that my father was there one day and was not there the next and wasn't there for a year. And that was kept secret from me and the family until I was 16, when a psychologist asked my mother, why was I so worried about my father. And as a 4-year-old, of course, I didn't know what happened, but children absorbed the atmosphere of the home and the tension and the distress and the worry and the anxiety. And I think one of the problems, of course, with a 4.5-year-old, you're not going to tell them exactly what happened. But as I got older, you start to make up your own stories to explain what all the tension, the worry, being on hypervigilant, and then you start to feel responsible for whatever's going on because you don't know what's going on. So secrets can really have a damaging impact, although I understand where my mother was coming from with 4 children and a husband in a mental hospital, and she was an active alcoholic. She needed to get sober, and that was the best she could do. She got herself sober, but she wasn't able to find a way to talk about it with her children.
Yeah, you know, I have a couple, and we've just started talking about suicide on the podcast because it's the one area that I feel the least equipped, because it, on some level, it feels intentional. So some of the rituals and the practices and the thoughts that I have that make sudden death more beautiful doesn't match with someone's experience that has had suicide in their family. And I, you know, it's a whole different experience because there was some agency there. It feels like there was some agency. And I actually probably should have someone on at some point that has had an attempted suicide attempt. So I can really understand what does go through someone's head, because we don't know that. But I do know, and you and I spoke about this, when we're talking about death or attempted death, there's this really fine line with children to somehow soothe their inner consciousness that says something's wrong here and what you're saying doesn't match. Mm-hmm. And you just overloaded me with too much information for my age. And I don't really have the sweet spot. I know for me, I told everything right away to my kids. And now it's almost been 5 years. And like my daughter's just starting to process it, just starting to process the trauma, just starting to understand what she saw. Because kids have magical thinking until they're about nine. So they don't really know where did dad go. And I assume for you all, your first experience of grief was probably twofold. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. Your mom is now a single mother and overwhelmed with four children. And back then, they didn't have the resources or the support that we all have now with communities. Mm-hmm. And then your father was there one day, and I assume you adored your father, and then he was gone.
Right.
Where did they tell you he went?
I don't remember being told anything, but I do, you know, eventually we got notes from him, and I heard the word hospital. So as children do, in the beginning, I thought, well, hospital, doctor, he's learning to become a doctor. And then I remembered he complained about his knees, so I thought he was having a knee operation. And so I didn't really know. And I think he did send us some beautiful notes from the hospital eventually, which was, talk about a gift. You know, I still have them and they're wonderful, perfectly written for the level of a 4 and 5 year old. But the hardest part was when he got back and there was all this worry about not getting him upset, not getting him angry. And so from my mother's perspective, because she didn't want him to become suicidal or go into a depression, but from a child's point of view, it's like, what's wrong with dad? And it always felt like life or death to me, getting him upset. I had no idea about suicide, but it had such, she was conveying implicitly that there were serious consequences. So constantly watching yourself. Did I say this? Maybe I did that. So at a certain point, and I agree, and I'm by no means an expert, and I have no idea really what the proper thing to do is. But at a certain point, you just don't want the child to feel responsible.
Right. That's really interesting, because a lot of times people have to go away now for depression or for rehab, or, you know, we're so much more aware of mental health now. And because of that, then we have places where people can go. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot less shame tied to it. Oh. But as a kid, when they come back into your house, when they're reintegrating, my brother-in-law is sober 14 years, the reintegration of defining a family again, when somebody has been through something where they had to take a hiatus from regular life, is one of the trickiest things, because the relationships have to be rebuilt. This is a new version that's come home, and the fear of it happening again is so pervasive. Mm. And still to this day, when I see my brother-in-law, I'm like, please, God, like it still hasn't. I mean, 14 years and I still don't trust. So I imagine for a kid, and without having the words of, you know, your mom wasn't able at the time to say to you at six, you know, when daddy gets sad, it's really harder for him than for some other people. His body gets sadder, his mind gets more scared. And we just want to do our best to help him. But you be a kid. And of course, you're going to upset him sometimes. And dad and I will work that out. You be a kid. But nobody said that.
No. Oh, my God. Absolutely not. I mean, nothing even close. And to even add to the dynamic in the family, my sister is 5 years older and she knew what had happened, but she was sworn to secrecy. So there were just layers of unspoken worry and distress. And you know, at the time, as you're pointing out, I mean, this was 1957 and the shame around suicide and mental illness, and no one talked about that. So it's understandable, and even had a real understanding. And from my mother's perspective, AA was just starting. So there wasn't a lot of really understanding, I don't think, of how to deal with it with children. Yeah, she was just gritting her teeth, white knuckling her way through it. And, you know, she kept the family intact, and we all grew up, and my father didn't attempt suicide again. So in the end, you know, it was a success, but of course we all kind of paid a price and had to deal with it.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to the, well, let's put a note that the trauma that you experienced as a kid and the secrets and the, what do they say in AA? You're only as sick as your secrets. And so they get stored somewhere. I talk about this all the time. The trauma is in your children, even if they're not showing it at the time. We get to carry that until we are equipped to deal with it. That's just how it works. And the body keeps score. And every little thing that happens to kids that you think they don't notice, if they don't notice it mentally, they notice it physically, and they just store it under their arm or in their leg. Or for my daughter, it's in her stomach. And so you are a kid, you've gone through this, you have trauma in you, but you're not at the point where you even understand what that means. Oh. But you've spent most of your life walking on eggshells, which, is there anything worse? I don't think so. I mean, there is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Tell me the big next life event that happened for you.
Well, as you say, you know, we do one way or the other, we're carrying that trauma. And I, you know, I'd had a lot of psychotherapy and I have the greatest respect for it. And I'm so grateful. I had a wonderful therapist. So by the time I was 50 or so, I had been through my childhood so much. I, you know, cried a lake, felt I really understood it, understood my triggers, and sort of I had gotten as far as I could possibly get. And even though I felt deep down some constraints, I thought, this is the best I can do, and I've come far. And then I was on a sunny July day, I was crossing a not busy street in a pedestrian crosswalk, and a pickup truck mows me down. I was looking in the windshield. It was shaded. I couldn't see the driver's face, but I thought he must see me. He didn't. I fortunately, no broken bones, no internal injuries, but clearly this was a trauma. And in the course of recovering from that trauma, another gift, you know, and I should say too, in terms of grief, you know, it was a loss with my father. Maybe it was a loss of emotional stability and security. Facing the truck, it was a loss of the sense of physical security and stability. So I ended up with an acupuncturist who started to study somatic experiencing, which is a psychophysiological technique for releasing stored trauma, just by coincidence. So I kind of went along on this journey with her. And sure enough, recovering from the trauma of the truck and dealing with that kind of loss and grief led me or impelled me to, again, deal with the trauma of my father's attempted suicide in the hospitalization when I was 4 and a half. I thought I had dealt with it. And no, it definitely was still in my nervous system. And through the physical techniques, it really helped me to release it. But I also think it is always an ongoing process. I'm much farther along. But just to summarize, I always thought it would be through talk, thinking, reasoning, memories that I would get to the bottom of it. And it ended up being through a physical technique.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, and as we talk about kind of supporting people through grief, talk therapy, I think, works for sure. And I have a lot of people that really love it and do it for a long time and have great connections with their therapist. You know, with kids, it's really hard because if it's hard for us to talk about it, I don't really know that kids have words to describe what they see or what they experience until they're much older. But I do know that somatic therapy works for kids because I've seen it over and over and over again, whether it be through craniosacral, where the kids will say, I just don't know what happened, but I feel better. Or, God, my stomach hurts after some type of acupuncture. And normally that's a cue that something is moving through, or the rapid eye movement. I'm actually going to start that with my daughter because we haven't done any trauma work because there weren't any words or anything to say. And you can tell with kids early on, sometimes they'll close their ears when it's too much and they don't want to talk about it. And that's a really good physical sign that they're not there yet, which I missed many times when I was trying to help my kids and force them to talk about it. And they clearly weren't ready. So it's interesting that when you started doing the acupuncture, somehow when you checked out of your critical mind and your body was able to just be in a state where it could start to release all of the stuff that came up that the 4.5-year-old, not the 40-year-old.
Exactly.
And the 40-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I remember specifically lying there. I had needles in me like usual. And all of a sudden I felt these tears coming. I felt all this, you know, fear and worry and terror. And then these tears come and I thought I was experiencing, and I couldn't breathe. And I thought I was experiencing the truck coming at me. And then I thought, oh my God, I didn't cry for months until after the truck. I was so kind of frozen. I said, I didn't cry then. What is this? And then it was just this total, you know, physical somatic recognition of that longing and sadness as a child. I realized that's what it is. Boy, it was really surprised me, but it was just so true. I could feel it.
I love the idea that you had to get hit by a truck. I just love the nuance of that statement and of that actuality that it felt like I got hit by a truck.
I mean, absolutely.
It's so on the nose. You're like, boy, universe, you're really silly. Like, I love that stuff because those were those sayings came from. It felt like I got hit by a truck.
It knocked me down. Yeah, absolutely. And I had just, you know, a week before, honestly, I was reading that book. And I think it was very popular, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. And I thought, oh my God, I just smashed my head on the pavement.
Was that Joe Dispenza's?
I've forgotten the author. I know his name, but it was before, this goes back to say 2010.
Okay. I can't remember the author, but yeah.
Yes. So I did definitely think about the fact that I literally took hitting my head. And just to add to it, when I was in the hospital and I wasn't there very long, surprisingly, I opened my eyes and I thought I was hallucinating. There were this parade or train of Buddhist monks from like age 7 to 80 in saffron robes going in. There was a Buddhist monk who was dying in the hospital. So I really thought, my God, I smashed my head. Now I'm, you know, surrounded by Buddhist monks. So
wow, that's amazing. I think too, and you've said, you know, shockingly or out of the blue or things like that. But how much do you believe that the things that have happened aren't random? I mean, what are your, because I think somewhere I was reading in the book, you know, accidentally, or these words, I kind of, right. I don't know anymore. Like you randomly got hit by a truck or, you know, your dad, the priest showed up and it was a gift, but it's these divine times in life where you go like, how can it be in that exact moment?
You know, absolutely. There was just no doubt to me at a certain point as I was recovering from the truck and I saw this acupuncturist and we had all these connections. We grew up in a town 3 hours away from where we were. I didn't, know anybody else from my hometown where we're living now. We ended up having the same loving, the same teacher. We wrote essays. We're 17 years apart. There was just all these things. It was crazy. And I just knew, I thought, oh my God, I am just being led. Just let go. My mother loved this, AA expression, let go, let God, because somebody is in charge here and I don't know the end, which kind of scared me. I didn't know where it was leading, but it felt so powerful. I knew I couldn't see the future, but something was guiding me that knew a lot more than I did. And right. I do the gratitude. I mean, I don't wish anyone to have a situation with their parent that I did or to get hit by a truck, but the gratitude I feel for having these experiences that really felt like grace. They come out of the blue and yet they're all connected and they're leading you. And it was really beautiful experience for me.
Well, that's amazing that you can see how all of these events kind of tied together at the right time. And even the hard things, all the things that got you to where you are today with a book written about insights that I think are really going to help people. I mean, I think we're constantly trying to learn, especially as a culture here in the West, how to deal with hard times. And one of the things Americans love to do is keep secrets. And that's one of our favorite things. And I think there is a movement starting to say, like, we can talk about these things. And there's obviously a huge movement that says the hard things in our life are really the juiciest ones that, if you so choose to come out of them healed, or if it puts you on a path of enlightenment, you wouldn't go back and change it. You wouldn't wish it on anybody. I think I said in my book, I wouldn't wish this experience on anybody and I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yes, yes. That's a wonderful way to put it. And I would hope that people, even in their, very dark times, will have the faith or hold on to the hope that really some beautiful things will come from it. And we can't necessarily predict what they'll be, but there'll be a lot of gratitude and grace that's experienced. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. What else would you like people to know about your experience, or what do you hope the book can do?
Well, I also just want to mention, since we're talking about grief, that in a way my book was bookended by grief, because I hadn't intended to write a book. I was writing a thank you note to a high school English teacher who had come to my brother's funeral. My brother died a month after the truck accident, another very shocking event, unexpected. And so once I started writing about him and how I felt and I filled her in on the truck, a channel just opened up that had been blocked my entire life. And all of a sudden I had access to memories, connections, reflections that I never had before. So it was a total freeing of my creativity. So I was writing a thank you note to a high school English teacher for coming to my brother's memorial service. He had died a month after my accident. And it just unleashed this channel that had been blocked up to that point. And all of a sudden I had access to these connections, memories, reflections. And it was just a flow of creativity. In terms of a gift of grief, it was really astonishing to me. And it was so beautiful and really felt like love. And so that was triggered by my grief and love for my brother. And then eventually, I realize I'm writing a memoir, and I do, and years go by, and finish the memoir, decide to publish it. I hadn't told my surviving siblings, my younger brother and my older sister, because I wanted to make sure that I was only writing from my voice. I didn't want their perspectives because it was my memoir. So in any event, I was very nervous to tell her, and I finally told them I was publishing it, and I'd had a complicated relationship with her. And she was so incredibly supportive and embracing in a way I never expected. So loving and supportive. It was absolutely wonderful. And then she gets very ill and she dies. And so the memoir, the after effect of the memoir is that it healed that relationship. And now I have this beautiful memory that I can carry forward with her. So I feel like the memoir came out of grief and it sort of is helping to resolve grief too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. It sounds like you, through every hard time, there is some type of reconciliation or some type of growth that you have been able to find along the way. And I think writing it all down, what a gift for your children and grandchildren and the family to understand kind of the history of how you all got where you are and why, you know, what you learned from it and how we can do things a little bit differently now that we know better.
Thank you. And just to add to people, I mean, I hope people read my book and think, you know, it's just never too late. It is never too late to keep working on oneself and to keep to gaining self-understanding and awareness, and people will get there just to not give up.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Go ahead and tell us, On the Ledge is available when?
Yes, it's publication date is September 6th. It's available for pre-order now on Amazon or even at your local bookstore, bookshop.org, and then it will ship out on September 6th.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on writing it down. I think there's something so wonderful of getting a story on paper because now it's out in the world to do its thing.
Thank you very much. It's been really fun to talk.
Yes, congratulations. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And remember, keep going. It gets better.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.